All right, good morning. I want to welcome everyone to the November 23rd, 2021 HRSD Commission meeting. We are now come to order. We will now have the roll call of HRSD Commission members. Please say here, Ms. Passio, call your name.
Glenn.
Here.
Dr. Wallace.
Yes.
Levinston.
Yeah.
Stern.
Yes.
Taraski.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, Fish New is in a remote location, so in accordance with Virginia Code 2.2-3702.2. A and the HRSD remote participation policy, Commissioner Lyman Wallace requiring approval to participate in today's meeting from Southampton, Pennsylvania due to personal matter which prevent him from attending the meeting in person. We will now have a roll call to vote on the request. Please state yes if you approve of remote participation or no if you do not. Ms. Passio, call your name.
Yes.
Dr. Wallace.
Yes.
Levinston.
Yes.
Stern.
Yes.
Taraski.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you all, Commissioner. Thank you, Fish, for dialing in. Thank you, Ms. Cassio. I understand there are several members of the public on the virtual meeting. We thank you for your interest in observing the meeting. There are a few reminders for today's virtual meeting. Number one, please keep your microphone on mute. You're not speaking. Number two, the audio on the non-exempt portions of the meeting is being recorded for posting on our website and in accordance with FOIA. Three, before speaking, including the making and seconding the motion, please first state your name. Please try to speak up as the mask tend to hold the voices. Number four, Ms. Cassio will call commissioners' names for roll call and vote on each agenda item requiring action. And number five, only public comments pre-registered with Ms. Cassio will be accepted during the call. I understand that one is registered to make public comments at this time.
That's correct.
Good, thank you. All right, then, in accordance with Code 2.2-3708.2A. All right. Sorry. Very good. Thank you. All right. Now go to the awards section. Ted, do you need to make any?
I will let you know here. Let's see what we got.
All right. If I need to pick from here, I'll do that.
We got it. So, yes. So the first item is, and our only award in recognition today, is if you recall, about a year ago, just over a year ago, Don didn't look quite so calm, and we were under a massive ransomware attack, and his staff did an amazing job under his leadership to bring us back without paying any ransom. Took us a little bit of time, but much less time than most other organizations of our size in this kind of attack. So just an amazing many months of work, actually, because the cleanup took a lot longer after we actually restored services. But and we were only out of communication with our employees and our customers for a few weeks, as opposed to months. And just read an article recently, you know, the end of 2020 saw this huge uptick in ransomware attacks, and the average times were months for folks to recover if they did. And most people were paying ransom. And even then, I was interviewed on for a podcast on cybersecurity the other day. And the person was telling me that even those that paid ransom found that it took much longer to recover from it with a decryption key than it would have had they had good backups to go from. But they didn't have any other options. So with that, I think you'll say the rest of it, Mr. Chair. It's in the resolution, and I think we're very pleased to be recognizing the entire department today for their efforts.
Very good. Thank you, Ted. All right, I'm going to read the resolution, and then after reading, I'm going to need a motion to approve it, and then we'll present the board afterwards. So whereas HRSD computer systems and data fell victim to the ransomware attack on November 17, 2020, and whereas quick and decisive action by ITD staff prevent an uncontrolled spread of the ransomware throughout HRSD network, and whereas culture, professionalism, dedication, and service has been established and nurtured within the IDT under the leadership of Don Corrado, director of IDT, and whereas Don Corrado led response by the entire IDT staff and cyber security recovery partners working around the clock to restore systems and data necessary to continue delivery of services, meeting Trustees' mission of protecting public health and the environment, and whereas IDT staff restored, rebuilt all critical systems in a fraction of the usual time where required, recovered the vast majority of HRSD business data, experienced no breach of data, and paid no ransomware to its attackers. And whereas, in the absence of such dedicated, professional, and effective staff, HRSD would have likely suffered a catastrophic event, been unable to continue operations for a prolonged period, and incurred millions of dollars in recovery costs. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the HRSD Commission that it hereby commends IDT staff for their extraordinary performance, professionalism, and managing the remediation and recovery of the ransomware attack. And be it further resolved that the Secretary of the HRSD Commission prepare a copy of this resolution for presentation to the IDT staff as expression of the Commission's appreciation and esteem. Adopted by the HRSD Commission on the 23rd day, November 23rd, 2021. Do I hear a motion?
Motion.
Do I hear a second?
Second. Thank you. That was Commissioner Glenn and Commissioner Stern.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye. There was a roll call. Ms. Cossey. Those opposed, saying aye.
Glenn? Lockdawalla?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Stern?
Yes.
Tarowski?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Thank you.
Right.
You're kind of in front of that angled table. You'll be on camera here.
Plan works.
There you go. Everybody can see it. All right.
Good job.
Thank you.
Do you want to say a few words there, Doc? Just a couple of words. I know that it's customary, but in this case, it is definitely worth note that the empowerment of ITD through the commission to the general manager was invaluable in our ability to act and react. We spent about this time last year, a couple hundred hours in this room, and some of which were lighter than others, but we got the job done, and I can't say enough about the support we had and the outstanding efforts of staff.
Doc, can you explain the coin a little bit for us in the picture?
I sure can. That was actually the work of a daughter of an ITD employee, Marilyn Niles. And we have here some of the things that were going on in 2020 that we thought we were going to say goodbye to. Not the least of which.
Can you explain what's on the
coin? I sure can. We have here the Murder Hornet, which didn't get very much notoriety, but it's still hanging out somewhere in the Pacific Northwest, I understand. Of course, 2020 at HRSD. Here we have the Ryuk ransomware virus, which is the actual virus that we were hit with. Over here, we have cybersecurity and
The red one's COVID, right? And the Ryuk.
We've got COVID over here. I got them mixed up. We've got Ryuk over here, and we have COVID-19 over here as the red bocce ball. Now, over here we have, and I did not want a coin cast with my image on it, but I got a great deal of pushback and made it as small as I could. So this is supposed to be me in a mask. ITD, this basically is sort of a takeoff on the medical science profession and the, can I remember the Latin term for it? In any event, that one only has one snake, this one has two. Indicative of healing, which is something that IT was able to do for the organization. They are enumerated. Each employee will receive one, as well as key contractors that were a part of the recovery. And down here, we have a quote from Hannibal as he was crossing the Alps. Hoc venam, enim hoc fascem, which is, we will find a way or we will make one.
What was the source of the virus? What country?
Spear phishing attack, and it was a group out of the former Soviet Union.
Yeah. Is that the largest source of, I mean, China also does it too, right?
Excuse me?
China also does it.
Yeah.
Do they typically focus on public utilities?
No, it was everybody. We were told that we were fortunate in that of the groups out there that engage in such malicious activities, these were the nicer of the guys.
What they would call them, honorable threat actors.
Yes, they honored their promises and their quotes, which I believe is $5 million coming out of the gate, which we did not pay. And they also did not breach or compromise any customer data or anything else that oftentimes you see with a ransomware attack.
So next to that.
I just wreaked havoc for months.
Yeah.
So then, should something else happen, I think you can recover in a quicker time now.
In a quicker time, with many of the systems, yes. The progress that we've made since we were in the middle of a rollout at Surface Pros when we were hit with Ryan, and we had to sort of back up and redo all the ones we had already put out, re-image those, get new ones out to all of the computer users at HRSD. And during that period of time, we also managed to migrate to Microsoft Office 365 in the cloud, as well as OneDrive, which is ongoing, but we're nearing the end of that process now. So the more that we get into the cloud, the better we stand in terms of ability to restore in a quick and timely fashion. And we're looking at that as we upgrade new systems to ensure that the maximum flexibility and restoration capability is sort of baked into it.
He said, we're glad we didn't pay a ransom.
I'm really glad we didn't pay any ransom.
Paid a little bit of just cost, but it was minimal.
Yeah, compared to.
Yes, we did. Okay. Insurance covered a big chunk of it.
Having lived through this in the healthcare system in my previous life, I commend you because I know that this is an awesome task because we had a really bad breach. And it is substantially difficult. So I commend you and your work. I was here at the time, but I can only fathom what you had to do. You challenging encounters. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Ted, I have a question. The premiums, have you for the cybersecurity insurance, have they really escalated?
I believe Jay Burness is on.
So they have, I don't know the exact number, but our insurance consultant, they really tried to negotiate them down because of course it's almost like getting in a car accident. There's no accident forgiveness for ransomware. So they really had to negotiate it down, but I don't have the exact number, but I can get it for you.
Thank you.
I do recall that it was a fraction of the amount that we were able to claim, an order of magnitude at least. We can get to the specific numbers if you'd like.
I remember seeing there were numbers in one of the reports. Thank you.
Pays for itself, right?
Yes,
absolutely.
Yep. Thank you again.
Don, thank you. I want to thank you and your staff and all those that are on listening. We certainly appreciate the commission, appreciates the time that you spent during the holiday that should be festive and enjoying your family, your friends, and good times and meals. So we appreciate you putting HRSD forward in order to get it to where it needed to be to support our customers and support the organization. So kudos, job well done. Thank you.
Thank you. The turkey will be much better this year.
Yeah. Enjoy Thanksgiving. Thank you. All right, we're going to move forward on to the consent agenda.
Staff not aware of any items to be pulled.
Okay. Commissioners have any items to pull out? Good. All right.
Thank you, Commissioner Levinston. Second, Taraski. Thank you.
All right. Well, those in favor signify by saying aye. Cassio, call your name or no, whichever is your favorite. Cassio.
Blinn.
Yes.
Lakdawalla.
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Stern?
Yes.
Taraski?
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Thank you.
Item three, disposition of real property. We spoke about this a little bit last month. This is a commission adopted policy that we drafted and we're putting in front of you for your thoughts and consideration over the next 30 days. We'll bring it to you for a vote, as our tradition has been to let you digest the policy. If you have any questions, we're willing to take them today or anytime between now and the next meeting, when we would bring this to you for approval and adoption next December. I mean,
okay. Any commissioners have any questions? Okay, please read through it. If you have any additional comments or suggestions, please contact Ms. Cossio by December 10th. Any changes to be made will be incorporated into the policy and presented to the commission for approval December 21st, 2021 meeting. Okay.
Item four, this is a mid-year inflation adjustment to salaries, and the recommended action is to approve a 1% cash bonus to all employees and grades in steps 1 through 10, and a 4.1% base salary increase to all employees in all grades in step X to be included in the pay received on December 30th. So our compensation policy is a little confusing, so let me explain what we have here. So we've got a standard table, a pay table, that all positions are graded and classified either in a grade, and then they have 10 steps to move to the top of the step, full performance, essentially. And that's on an annual basis, they can earn a merit increase, which is a 4.4% increase in that step. When they get to the top step, they're topped out. That's the value of the position from HRSD's perspective. But we don't want them to lose spending power year after year to inflation. And so those people, once you've topped out, can earn, if you get a merit increase that year, you would earn an increase based on the CPI for the previous 12 months before we do the budget. So it lags pretty far behind. So if you imagine when we do the budget, we look at a December to December CPI view. It's actually the change CPI view that we'll get into. And then you pass the budget in May and we start that in July. So we're looking already 7 months beyond for the inflation adjustment, which hasn't been a problem for inflation that's been bouncing between 1% and 2%, not a big deal. As you're all well aware, inflation has taken this rocket move up. And so spending power is being eroded dramatically among our people that are above the scale. Everyone else is still getting their 4.4 if they've earned their merit. So they're not losing much ground, but they're losing a little bit of ground. So the 1% cash bonus for all those people keeps them relatively whole in relation to inflation for the year. So they'll end up with essentially a net 5.4 this year if they get their merit. The folks who are topped out, the inflation adjustment, if they earn their merit, was 1.2. We're adding that to the 4.1, so they're going to get an effective 5.3. So it's all essentially in the same ballpark. It just looks a little weird how we're doing it. We are doing every 3 years, we do a complete market-based salary analysis of that pay table, which really focuses on that top step, because we want our folks to be here for their careers and be really competitive on our pay at that top step. So that's where we really focus a lot of our work, at the entry level and at the top. And the whole salary table moves according to the market survey, which we will get during this budget process, the January, February timeframe. When you start considering the budget, we'll have the results. We would expect to see an adjustment in the whole pay table, like based on, you know, all the information says, you know, salaries are increasing. We're obviously seeing this inflation basis, whether that's temporary or permanent. But there has been wage growth like we haven't seen in many years. And we would expect our salary table to get adjusted. But once again, that only affects the people within those steps that are in the table. We still have about, you know, a significant number, maybe 30 to 40% of our folks that are topped out that won't see any adjustment as a result of that. But they will be able to earn an adjustment based on inflation from December 20 to December 21, which is probably going to be relatively similar. So all those are going to happen part of budget, but we just thought waiting until July to make any kind of changes was too long in this environment. And this should get us, pull this over until new budget to go into effect with whatever adjustments are made today. So that's our proposal.
All right. Here's the proposal. Are there any questions? Okay. There are no questions. There's a motion to approve is in order. Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify saying yes. Copy a couple of name or no if you're not in favor.
Glenn?
Yes.
Lackawalla?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Stern?
Yes.
Tarosky?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Thank you.
Item 5 is Recreational Trails Program Grant Agreement and the recommended action this morning to approve the terms and conditions of a sub-grantee agreement with the Virginia Department of Conservation and Recreation for preliminary engineering and construction of the Flax Mill Creek Trail and authorize me to execute that. So a little history here, the Flax Mill map in front of you. So the what's in pink wraps around our treatment plant. This is the James River Treatment Plant in the center. We are building a trail along the waterfront, Flax Mill Creek, that cuts around the James River and ultimately gets to back to the trail system that is within the Riverview Farm Park. It is an awesome looking trail because it's going to be elevated, have some great water views. It's a really impressive trail. It's about $2.5 million. You know, it was part of the deal we made with the city. We took 10 acres of the park. We wanted to make more public access to the river. So it fit all those benefits. A DCR's grant program is going to pay about $300,000. Actually, that's what the grant is, $300,000 for part of that. We're very pleased to be part of that DCR program. They only awarded 9 grants, and we were one of them. And every bit helps. So they're quite excited about it, DCR is, and we are. And it's going to be a wonderful benefit to the region and to the Green Bay Board.
Ted, with the additional trail, what's going to be what's the distance of the Milwaukee Trail?
So from the two red dots, from the red dot here where it starts on the existing trail over to the Menchville, this second part will be finished in phases as we build out the rest of the treatment plant. This first piece is about a half a mile and the second piece is another. So there's a full mile of addition trail.
So it's $2.5 million for a half mile.
Well, a lot of it is it's elevated, it's clearing, it's building some bridges actually over some ravines. So yeah,
Is this a similar trail or type of trail that'll coming around? I'll look around.
I think so. This is a little more challenging, but the idea of staying around dip is we've reserved the waterfront for a trail to go around dip in a similar fashion.
Okay.
That one's not as challenging to build.
Sure. Did I hear a second?
Second.
Good. Any discussion? All those in favor will signify by saying yes. Those opposed, no. Ms. Coffey, call.
Glenn?
Yes.
Lackawalla?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Stern?
Yes.
Tarosky?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Thank you.
Item 6 is a fuel supply and delivery service contract award and the recommended action is to award a blanket purchase contract for fuel supply and delivery to PAPCO Incorporated, the estimated amount of $589,835 for 1 year. So this is a delivery of gasoline and ultra-low sulfur diesel for HRSD. This is just a one-year contract because we'll be putting out a multi-year contract. We actually had a contractor in place that is not meeting our performance expectations. So we've terminated that contract, and this one will fill in for a remaining period, and then we'll be putting a contract out for competitive bid again shortly after.
Okay, so in a not meeting, was it not never?
There are multiple issues, but it's around scheduling deliveries, getting them when they're supposed to be there, keeping us filled, knowing what's happening. It's they've been a challenge.
So with the price of gasoline fluctuating the way it is,
it's an estimated amount, and there's actually adjustments based on fuel price. So they're not paying the same price for the full year. There's built in methods for adjusting.
How do you get the contract?
So we actually, Amy, are you out there in cyber world for me? That was many years ago. Jay?
I could barely hear the question. Was it how was the prices?
Yeah, did we compete the PAPCO, this contract just for PAPCO, or did we go to them because they were second low on the price?
No, yeah, we went to them because they were second low, because we don't have time to go put the whole thing back out again. So we ended up going to the second low.
Thank you. Trosky second.
All right, very good. Thank you. Is there any discussion? All those in favor will signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. Ms. Cassie, your name.
Flynn?
Yes.
Lakdawalla?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Stern?
Yes.
Taroski?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Thank you.
Item 7 is Birchwood Trunk 24-inch and 30-inch Force Main and Independence Boulevard Replacement Phase 2. Recommended action this morning is to appropriate the total project funding amount of $1,702,700. So this is replacing some pipe that we had a leak on back in 2009. We did an emergency repair and really need to do a complete roadway crossing here. So this is part of our rehab action plan. Phase two has to be done by May of 2025. And we're ready to start that work. You'll see a number of these projects. There were a bunch in last month's agenda, there'll be several more as we get these projects going. So this is again to get RK&K to start doing the preliminary engineering work to get this project designed and bid and built according to schedule.
Any questions from commission? If not, is there a motion to approve?
So moved. Is there a second?
Second. Is there any discussion? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying yes. Those opposed, no. As Ms. Cassio called her name.
Flynn?
Yes.
Lakdawalla?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Stern?
Yes.
Taroski?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Thank you.
Item 8, climate change planning. There's two actions this morning. One is to appropriate additional funding, the amount of $1,870,000. And then to approve a task order with CDM Smith in the amount of $1,870,000. So we started this planning project several years ago. They've done some great work for us, much more detail on one plant, which was the Atlantic Treatment Plant at the time. And we've decided that we'd like to expand their scope to include similar work on some plants we're about to do some serious work on, York River, VIP advancement. We're going to make significant investments over the next several years. Probably a good idea to understand the impact of this climate change sea level rise as we work that into those designs. So we tasked them with doing that based on your approval of this. But before we do that, I'd like to see where we are as far as the study goes, because they've done a bunch of this work. So we've asked CDM Smith to do a short presentation here this morning to summarize sort of where they've been and where they're going as far as climate change work. And with that, I will drive the presentation, and I think we've got, if I get it to fit on my screen correctly. Okay, Mike, I think, are you driving this or running this, and tell me when to advance or?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and give the presentation and I can just let you know when to advance each slide. Does that work?
That works, thanks.
Okay, great. And can you hear me okay?
Yes, you sound great.
Okay, good. All right, well, good morning, everyone. It's my pleasure to be here to provide an update on the climate change planning study. Also on the call today, sorry, I'm on my phone with my camera here. Let me, I could do a little better. See me a little better now?
Yeah, it works.
Okay. Also on the call today, we have Lauren Miller. She's a senior technical member of our team and also leads our resilience discipline for all CDM Smith. And then our project manager, Dr. Matthias Wittenberg, is also on the call. All right, let's move it forward to the next slide. These are our objectives today. I'd like to provide an overview of the study, help you understand the tasks we've completed, where we are, what's coming up, and then also demonstrate the benefits of conducting this proposed vulnerability assessment for these three plants at Nansman, VIP, and York River. So this slide really shows a good example of why we're undertaking this study. Today, the Atlantic Treatment Plant is shown. It's really high and dry. It's protected from the east, from storm surge, from high ground. Right now, storm surge in Southern Virginia Beach, it impacts Back Bay and to an extent, you know, some of the southern watersheds, but it's not able to reach the Atlantic Treatment Plant today. However, as sea level rise occurs and the protective benefits of the barrier islands and of the existing marsh in Back Bay, that'll be diminished with sea level rise. And then over time, storm surge will be able to propagate more inland. And then over even more time, the devastating wave impacts from storm surge will be able to reach the Atlantic Treatment Plant. So 2050 to the end of the century is when we're going to start seeing increased vulnerability at the Atlantic Treatment Plant. This is exactly why we're doing this study. So sea levels have risen over the last century. If we just go ahead and look at the observed data collected at the Sewell Point tide gauge, we can see 1.5 feet over the last century. It's been fairly linear in the past. The big question is what's going to happen in the future? And on the next slide, we see some of that. So here we can see that linear trend, but then moving forward, the latest science has many models, many forecasts. Right now, the green line, which is the NOAA intermediate forecast, and the purple line, the intermediate high, are generally the two that most agencies are planning around. The Hampton Roads region is planning around the green line, and new infrastructure is being planned using these increments of 1.5 feet, 3 feet, and 4.5 feet. And so we're, in our planning study, we're being consistent with the region, and we're actually using these curves, which is what's recommended for more specific facility planning. So we're using both the green and the purple curve for our study. Next slide. I'm sure all of you know, the region is currently vulnerable to storm surge. So in the brown is generally areas that are at risk today. That's approximately a category one type hurricane. So substantial areas at risk today, and what's gonna happen in the future as sea level rise occurs, the frequency, the area, and the depth of impacts is gonna continue to increase. And so these other colors are attempting to identify that expanded footprint. We've developed a robust, thoughtful approach on how to evaluate the situation and the changing situation over time. It has these many tasks. I'll actually spend more time on the next slide, which includes the schedule, and talk a little bit about each task. So we started out with developing our project plan, collecting data, and defining priority assets. So upfront, there was a lot of working with the asset management group, getting specifics on the data that's available and how that can be effectively included in the analysis. Then we moved on to some pilot analyses. Because this is a study that's not, you know, it's not something that HRSD typically does, it was important for us to be able to show the approach, the technical approach, and provide a good understanding of what the findings and the products are. So we were able to work through that with the pilot. Then we moved on to determining the flood water elevations at all of HRSD's facilities. And that was especially challenging. There's a large area over which the facilities are located, and there's no comprehensive regional data source for flood elevations. So we had to complete that analysis, and we did. Right now, we're in the middle of completing the vulnerability assessment for most of the facilities, and that's using representative information collected from the pilot and a select handful of facilities. And I'll get a little bit more in the upcoming slides on differentiating between representative and detailed. Then next, we completed a detailed vulnerability assessment and mitigation measure evaluation for the Atlantic treatment plant. And I have some slides coming up to talk about that. Proposed in the blue are the vulnerability assessments for the three treatment plants. And then toward the end of 2022, early 2023 is when we'll be providing that completed plan. All right, so putting this in perspective, we've developed all the flood elevations. The 1% annual chance flood elevation is at the facility site for 51 pump stations today. So 1% is also, you might think of that as the 100-year flood elevation. And then over our planning horizon between present day and 2100, we estimate an additional 15 pump stations will become vulnerable. And then we've determined that 36 are above that 1% annual chance as it continues to increase over the remainder of the century. Similar numbers here for pressure reducing stations. And then most important for your highest value assets, your treatment plants. There's 5 treatment plants exposed today, 3 that will be exposed in the future, and 5 that will be above at the end of the century. And in the box there, you can see the specific treatment plants that are at risk today and in the future. Unfortunately, Nansman VIP and York River are all in that existing category. All right, next. So when we're talking about exposure and understanding risk, it's important to get specific. And so here at the Atlantic Treatment Plant, we're able to show different buildings, their elevations, and when flood elevations will sort of reach each of these buildings. We can see here sort of in the 2042 timeframe, really starts with one initial building and then it expands a bit as it goes up another foot or two in the 2050s. And then by 2060s, there's even more buildings. And so, we went on site, we were able to do inspections of the specific assets. We're able to determine at what elevation will various treatment processes or particular assets be impacted. And that's what all goes into this detailed analysis of really translating flood elevations into risk and understanding how that changes over time. All right, next slide. After being able to understand vulnerability, then the next step is to determine how do we protect these various assets. And so this slide presents a number of options, generally increasing in cost and complexity from left to right. The first one is dry flood proofing. That would be sort of like barriers in the doorways, closing off drains, very specific and protective measures for buildings. Those types of improvements are generally good for up to about 3 feet of elevation, 3 feet of depth, I should say. Then the other ones, flood wall, levee, and floodgate, that's gonna be more substantial. That's gonna be a barrier either around individual buildings or around the entire site. If that's not enough, then the next option would be to reconstruct and elevate the facility in the same place it's located. And then the last option would be to retreat and relocate to other locations. As an example, in that retreat relocate, there's several pump stations in the Larchmont neighborhood of Norfolk that are being consolidated and relocated. So that's something you're already undertaking today. All right, next. So in evaluating our mitigation measure options for Atlantic Treatment Plant, we looked at 2 different approaches and we wanted to understand how these compare and contrast and also their feasibility. One was to look at building level or process level mitigation measures. Some advantages associated with that approach is it's potentially more feasible and then also potentially less expensive depending on the number of facilities and the extent of what needs to be protected. The second option is a site-wide mitigation measure. So that in this case, it was a berm and wall around the whole site, some stormwater pump stations for interior drainage. The benefit of this approach, it protects all the assets, not just the mission critical assets. The downside is it's something that needs to be measured. It needs to be implemented all at once. So that's a potentially a larger cost all at once. All right, next slide. So in completing this analysis for Atlantic Treatment Plant, we were able to confirm the technical approach. So we were able to effectively conduct the site visits, review and determine elevations of critical assets. We were able to summarize those core functions and their elevations, compare flood elevations with the critical asset elevations, do the analysis and compute vulnerability. We're also able to formulate feasible on-site mitigation measures. So what could we really expect to construct that would be technically feasible on the site, that would be operationally feasible, that, not interfere with the operations of the facility, and then also look at cost. And then lastly, determine that risk that's present. So in the end, it produced plant-specific information needed to drive decisions. And on the next slide is the kind of high-level findings. So we were able to determine that flood risk is low for the next several decades. So the good news is there's time to make a decision. We don't need to run out and build a wall immediately. There's time. And we also found that if HRSD moves forward with an on-site solution, the facility-wide mitigation measure is preferred for this location. That's the one that's most cost-effective in terms of protecting assets versus the cost of the measure. And then lastly, we recommend engaging in a regional solution to reduce flood risk before advancing the facility-wide solution. Specifically, Virginia Beach is moving forward with their sea level rise plan. They're looking for ways to protect the southern part of the city, and that in effect would also protect the treatment plant. So it's definitely worthwhile to see how that progresses and see how you could partner with the city in moving that forward. All right, next slide. So the benefits of conducting a similar detailed vulnerability assessment for Nansman, VIP, and York River is that it's going to provide plant-specific data and results. You're going to understand specifically when various buildings, when various treatment processes are going to be impacted over time, what the dollar value is of those assets. We'll be able to formulate feasible mitigation measures at each plant. What could you really do on each of those sites? And that's going to lead into CIP planning, both in terms of timing and anticipated cost. And it's going to allow the initiation of engineering design if the decision is made to go forward with a site-specific solution. Very importantly, it's going to help protect the SWIFT investments by either determining elevations at which to construct those new facilities, or it'll identify the mitigation measures needed to protect them. And then lastly, it'll help with locality coordination and regional resilience planning. There's certainly a possibility at any one of these sites that a regional solution could protect both the surrounding community and the treatment plant. And so you'll be able to bring this information to bear and help have informed discussions with the localities and try to drive good decisions for both yourself and the region. And that's it. I'm available for your questions.
Any questions, concerns? Okay. Know that we're doing an appropriation in the amount of $1.87 million. Do I have a motion to approve it?
Glad.
Second on that.
Second.
Thank you. All right. Any discussion? Good. Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. As does Kathy O'Connor.
One.
Yes.
Dr. Walla.
Yes.
Levinson.
Yes.
Stern.
Yes.
Tarowski.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mike and your team for doing that. Look forward to the results of the next one.
Thank you. Me too.
Thank you, Mike.
Item 9, Effingham Interceptor Vault Removal. This is three actions we're looking for this morning. Appropriate additional funding, amount of $2,687,638. Award a contract to Bridgman Civil, the amount of $2,179,062. And approve a task order with RK&K in the amount of $351,426. You can see we took bids on this project. This turned into a pretty challenging project. We started out with trying to get this vault out. So we've blown it into this standalone project. We've put the bids out. We've got great bids from Bridgman. You can see the other three contractors. Bridgman was right in line with our estimate. RK&K has done this work for us, so this task order for them is for the construction, administration, and inspection pieces. We're just ready to get this finally taken care of and involved.
Are there any questions?
All right.
Thank you, Commissioner Robinson. Is there a second?
Tarosky. Second. Thank you.
Thank you. Any discussion? Okay, then all those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. As Ms. Cassio, call your name.
Lynn.
Yes.
Lockawalla.
Yes.
Levinston.
Yes.
Stern. Yes. Tarosky.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Thank you.
Item 10 is Poplar Hall Davis Corner Trump 24-inch gravity sewer improvements. The recommended action is to appropriate the total project funding in the amount of $2,262,394. This project's to rehab and replace about 1,600 feet of 24-inch gravity line. It's part of the Phase 2 rehab action plan, and we need that to complete by May of 2025.
Any questions?
Second.
Start. Second. Thank you. Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. As Ms. Cassio, call your name.
Lynn.
Yes.
Lockawalla.
Yes.
Levinston.
Yes.
Stern.
Yes.
Tarosky.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Thank you.
So item 11 is Virginia Beach Boulevard Force Main Phase 6 cost sharing agreement. So we're asking this morning to approve the terms and conditions cost sharing agreement with the City of Virginia Beach for this force main. We actually have done most of this work at this point as part of the Virginia Beach Boulevard force main project. There was a section of work that was a betterment to the city that we did as part of our in-plan, in-scope project. Always with the intention of them paying for it. We just realized we didn't get this agreement approved prior to that, so before they'll pay us, we need to get the agreement in place. No problem between the city and Virginia and us on this, but we just need to back up a little bit and get the agreement approved so we can get our $133,197.
Okay, are there any questions from the commission? Do I have a motion to approve? Is there a second? Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. Ms. Cassio, call your name.
Lynn.
Yes.
Lockawalla.
Yes.
Levinston.
Yes.
Stern.
Yes.
Tarosky.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Thank you.
Item 12 is York River Treatment Plant Primary Clarifier Influent and Effluent Pipe Rehabilitation. So this is a new CIP, an initial appropriation. We're looking for those two actions. One is to approve the new CIP, and two is to appropriate the total project funding of $4,756,000. Back about January of this year, when we were having some other issues, we had the pipe that goes from the headworks to the first distribution box for the clarifier. So all the plant flow and worker goes through this one pipe. It blew out at the top. It had corroded from off-gassing, and the concrete crown had all deteriorated. We lost about 6.8 million gallons of wastewater as a result of that. And went through a multi-month bypass and reconstruction of that pipe. There's no way to get, everything has to flow through that. So we had a pretty challenging emergency to get that all fixed. At the same time, we said, hey, I wonder how many other single points of failure are there out there in similar condition than the plants. And at York River, It goes from the distribution channel into the various clarifiers, and those pipes, the what parts we can see and get into, are having similar crown corrosion and really need to be replaced before they blow up and cause big problems. Pretty complicated project includes part of those pipes are actually under the clarifiers. You know, our clarifiers, big round tanks that get fed from the center, so the pipe comes in underneath the clarifier and then feeds up. And so that section that's sort of under the clarifier, we're hoping we can reline. And I'm not really sure what else we're going to be able to do there, but it's going to be a complicated project, but something that needs to be done soon, and we didn't want to wait to get it into the CIP starting next year. We actually want to move forward as quickly as we can. So we'll make sure we're doing everything we can to keep something like this from happening again.
Okay, any questions?
Hey, I noticed this is reinforced concrete. Is there another solution for this?
It won't go back as reinforced concrete.
Okay.
It'll be lime, it'll be HDB. What we put in, I think, was HDB for the replacement for the piece we had to take out. But yeah, this has been in service long before good linings had come along, and much better materials we can use now for similar applications. We're doing a full inspection of all our plant sites for similar conditions, similar challenges, using our asset management team to really identify those critical assets that we may be accelerating a little bit based on this.
Any further questions? Okay, is there a motion?
Whoever moves.
Is there a second?
Kurowski seconds. Thank you.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. That's Ms. Cassio. Call your name.
Black. Yes.
Papuola.
Yes.
Levinson.
Yes.
Sir.
Yes.
Kurowski.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Item 13 is a Surrey Hydraulic Improvements and Interceptor Force Main. This is an easement acquisition. The recommended action today is to approve the purchase of a 3,316 square foot permanent easement, according with terms and conditions outlined herein. So you recall, been around for a while, we have about 150 different parcels we have easements on for this long project. We're down to the last four. This is one of the four. All four of those, we started the condemnation take process to acquire for various reasons. This one, we were able to reach a settlement with property owner. So now we're down to three. Those three are all for basically title issues. We can't get all, you know, all the heirs, all the owners. It's just so clouded up. The only way to solve that is going to be going through the rest of the condemnation process. It's really a friendly condemnation process at that point. It's the folks we have been able to understand our owners want to make this happen. They just can't get everyone's signature on the line. We can't identify all those errors and such. So we expect three more parcels to come to you in the future, but this is the last one that's negotiated, and I think the other three will be
our foundation. Question about the appraiser selection for determining cost. How we get, how was Valbridge selected?
Bruce, I don't recall. Do we have an annual contract, or how are we doing the appraisers?
If I recall right, Valbridge is working as a sub to our real estate consultant, and they've helped us through this project. This is, you know, it's been a design build project, and we've been working closely with the design build team to get these easements and to figure out exactly what we needed. So, but yeah, I believe the Valbridge Property Advisors is a sub consultant to our real estate consultant, which has a 5-year contract.
Yes, we have an annual service contract with the real estate consultant. These are our sub.
Sometimes we'll use the consulting engineer to help us with that, or we'll use our annual services. I believe this is through our annual services.
Okay, any further questions? Do I have a motion to approve? Do I have a second?
Second, start.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no. Ms. Cassidy, call your name.
Black.
Yes.
Papuola.
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Stern?
Yes.
Taraski?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Thank you.
Item 14 is our wastewater surveillance study update. So we've got Raul presenting this morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Ted, do you mind going? Actually, you know what? I really should have put COVID-19 wastewater surveillance update, just to be clear. But next slide. Thanks. And of course, the first thing I'll show is just a graph of the clinical COVID data for the state of Virginia. We've been, you know, as if you've been following the news, we've been seeing a slow tailing off of clinical cases here in Virginia. I'm a little, you know, I'm wondering if the slow tailing is due to potentially some of these increased cases that we're seeing abroad in Europe and in other states like Michigan and Massachusetts. But here locally, Ted, if you go to the next slide, here locally, if you look at the bottom figure, those are the clinical cases. We've definitely seen a more dramatic reduction locally. On the top figure, what you're seeing is our regional COVID load, and that's definitely been tailing off a little slower. I wouldn't be surprised if that gets confounded a little bit with Thanksgiving, with what's happening in other states and internationally. You know, these rising cases. But on the plus side, Ted, if you'll go to the next slide. If you look at this last week's data on a regional or on a spatial level, we've had our first plant go non-detect for COVID for the first time since last April, which is a good sign. That's our Bode Harbor treatment plant. All the other maps look not very dramatic because all the cases are slowly decreasing, but I think it is good news that we're starting to get non-detects at our facilities. Next slide. And then also locally, you know, we're still moving forward with collaborative projects that have been ongoing. One of the ones that I've presented, or that Kyle Curtis and I have presented over the last few months, has been this this local neighborhood level surveillance of in Chesapeake that we've been working with the City of Chesapeake, the Chesapeake Local Health Department, and the Virginia Wastewater Surveillance Group. That's ongoing. It's going strong. We're monitoring, if you remember, we're monitoring 5 vulnerable neighborhoods. And what you're seeing now is a new way we're showing the data, summarizing the data, which is just a time series of the data. 5 of the 6 neighborhoods are non-detect, and we're only down to 1. So also good news locally. Next slide. And that study's ongoing. I thought I would just move my little provide a few other updates. I know I feel like every month I mentioned that there's going to be a state and a national wastewater surveillance dashboard that everybody could see. Progress is being made on both those fronts, both for the state and nationally. And the national dashboard is the CDC National Wastewater Surveillance System. They're almost done. I've seen them. I've seen the CDC dashboard. It's really nice. It's great at showing trends in different regions. I think it's just not quite ready for prime time, but I think it should be out soon, like the first of the year, maybe. Another update that I think I've mentioned here and there is this collaboration with the US EPA on a paper, actually, that Kyle Curtis and I wrote about a year ago about how to add confidence and probability to the environmental COVID data. We just kind of put it out there as
as an idea, hoping that that someone could take this and run with it, and EPA picked that up, and we are in progress of expanding this COVID confidence model that we put out. So that's very exciting. I think Kyle's actually on a call right now with EPA on fleshing out some more of the fine details of that. And then the last update I have is, over the last few months, we've been working with the state lab, DCLS, to get them up and going with wastewater surveillance. I think starting this week or next week, they'll be up and going and running their own samples. So they'll be taking the lead on the Virginia Sentinel Monitoring Program. They're also going to be taking over the Department of Corrections weekly analysis. But I did want to mention, I don't have a link yet, but Megan Mayfield from the Department of Correction is presenting to the Virginia Wastewater Community of Practice Wednesday, December 14th from 11 to 12 on Department of Corrections use of wastewater to prioritize COVID testing in Virginia, in Virginia facilities. And I think she might be talking about the future of that program, which includes other targets as well. I confirm that that's open to anybody that wants to see it. So they'll be showing all of our data, since we've been running all the data for them from the beginning. I don't have a link, but as soon as that becomes available, I can share that with anybody that wants to hear that presentation. And with that, I think that's all I have. I think that was my last slide. I can take any questions.
Yeah, Raul, if you'd share that link with Jennifer so she can pass it on to
them. Okay, I will. Jennifer, I should be getting that any day now.
Perfect, thank you.
Let me ask one question, Raul. I've always got a question for you. On the information that the Chesapeake Health Department is gathering, do you know what they were doing with that information?
That project, that's actually, that project actually produces actionable an actionable response. So when a neighborhood is positive, like in this situation where only one neighborhood's positive, they go and place vaccine and testing clinics right in the middle of the neighborhood, and as well as go door to door. I think Kyle presented some updated numbers last month. I didn't actually catch what the numbers are this month, but they vaccinated something on the order of, I believe, like 200 plus individuals from this program, and have also I'm sorry, did I say vaccinated? They tested, and they've also vaccinated quite a few, but I don't actually have those numbers or the latest numbers with me, so I'm afraid they'll be late. But yes, that data actually gets used every week. So we collect samples on Monday and try to get data out by Wednesday, and then there's actually a really big weekly meeting with a whole lot of folks that decide what actions will happen where.
Very good. I'm glad to see that somebody's actually using that information.
Oh, no, absolutely. Actually, this particular study was only supposed to go for 10 weeks back in March, and it's still going on because they found it to be useful.
Very good. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Raul.
All right.
No problem.
Item 15, Executive Search Committee report. I think that's the chairman.
Okay. Let's start November 8th, 2021. Baker Tilly provided the Executive Search Committee of HRSD General Manager the semi-finalist report. In that report, we had a summary of the search, a description of the content of the report, instructions for reviewing video interview, and recommendations for reviewing of semi-finalist material and selection of finalists. Meetings were held with the commission, members from August 21st through September 10th. Baker Tilly obtained inputs from HRSD leadership team to identify additional key qualifications and experience desired in the next general manager. On October 1st, 2021, advertisements were placed in 8 publications online. Baker Tilly made direct contact with over 4,675 individuals. Baker Tilly screened the application received based on the recruitment brochure, conducted video questionnaire, telephone interviews, and conducted internet and media searches. 13 applications were received in response to the general manager position. Through Baker Tilly's screening process, 5 candidates were presented to the executive search committee. Baker Tilly asked the executive search committee to select 5 candidates from the 5 applications provided. Baker Tilly provided the executive search committee with tips for reviewing the candidates. Today, 23 November, the search committee held a closed session to review finalists. Baker Tilly will conduct public records background checks and reference contacts on the finalists. Baker Tilly will ask the finalists to, they will ask the finalists to complete a leadership management style assessment. Today, the executive committee reviewed the survey results as a starting point to determine the candidates who will be, first of all, participate in interviews, interview dates, design an interview process, interview questions, interview person, to be interviewed personally or virtually, and interview location. December 14th, Baker Tilly will complete the background checks, the reference check. December 20th, finalist list will be provided. And this day, January 11th through 14th is a tentative date for the interview process. Baker Tilly asked the executive committee to select 10 questions to provide to Ms. Castillo to be used in the interview process. Senior manager interviews will be played will be 21 December. That's the end of our report.
Sorry about the late notice on this one, but we finally reached a tentative deal on a piece of property we need for the Boat Harbor treatment plant replacements. This is a land for a pump station and a storage tank. It's been a challenging negotiation, but we're finally there. So this is the recommended actions this morning to approve additional project funding amount of $4,802,000 and to approve the purchase of commercial property at 1201 Terminal Avenue, New Pernice. It's 4.7 acres. And all the associated acquisition costs for $8 million according to the terms and conditions of a counteroffer that's got signed by both parties. Not binding, but definitely outlines the terms. So this includes, they're losing about 5 acres of parking, and they're a ship built a repair facility. And every time they bid on a federal contract, they have to show they've got the parking available to support the ship according to the federal requirements for each ship. And so this is a major challenge for them, is to figure out how to give up that parking for us to build our facility. So they're gonna have to build some new parking offsite. So we're essentially paying to replace that parking in addition to buy the property. And then there's some stormwater work they're providing as well. This is inland to where the rest of the parcel goes out to the water. And so they're gonna build a stormwater facility along the edge, and we'll be able to put our runoff into to the James River. So I think it's all working well together. It's just been a challenge to get to this. A bunch of easements are included. So we got to go through their property to get to the river and go under the river and the dancing. So That was a critical part of the deal as well. But we're excited to finally maybe have a home and a place we could fully design to, you know, the clock's ticking. We're committed to being out of Boat Harbor by the end of 2025. That's a very aggressive schedule for
very good. Are there any questions?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yes, sir.
From Boat Hall, transfer on this transfer to this pin transfer.
All the flow. So we're designing this 36 million gallon a day capacity for the pipe and 12 million storage on this side. So and we've done a detailed hydraulic analysis to determine that pretty much handles anything that comes our way short of a hurricane. About five main storms in our history would have been handled by that capacity. They would have gone over, they did go over, but we'll manage that additional flow during those, you know, very unique events at that point in time. But it's, so essentially we're taking all the flow that comes to Boat Harbor today, pump it across the river, under the river, to Mansman where we'll get treated. So Mansman will be upgraded to deal with this additional flow. The pipe will be put on the river. This pump station and storage tank will be there to manage this.
All of the treatment will be done at Mansman.
Correct. So that we'll ultimately abandon the entire site that Boat Harbor currently exists. As part of this deal, we've given them an option to buy that after we're finished with the property. They might use that for their parking, their permanent parking solution. They might not want to buy it by 2026 when we're off doing something else. We will be finished with that site, but with the exception of a small pump station, a cell tower, and a little bit of supporting area.
Any questions? Do I have a motion to approve?
Commissioner Stern first.
Okay, second. Is there a second? Will you want a
second? Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Willie.
All right.
Okay, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. All those opposed. Those opposed say no. As Ms. Casey, I'll call your name.
Glenn.
Yes.
Levinson.
Yes.
Stern.
Yes.
Jaroski.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
One other unfinished business that I got notice of yesterday is that the consent decree amendment finally was filed with the court yesterday. So the next step is there's a 30-day public comment period and then the judge can sign it. So finally got some movement after what started in 2006, not actually having a deal with finance. So. The cybersecurity premium that you asked about,
yes,
has gone up by $156,000. No accident forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Any other new business?
That's all we have. Sorry about that.
No worries. Very good. Thank you. Commissioner comments? Okay. Hearing none, I wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy your food, your families. Yes, ma'am. I'm getting flagged down.
Gotta say something.
All right, get out.
I'll think about
that. Talk fast.
No one's registered to make public comments. Correct. All right. Informational. No action is required. Are there any questions on the general manager's information provided? Thank you, Ms. Casca. All right, our next meeting is December 21st, 2021 at HRSD South Shore Operation Complex. 1434 Arrow 11, Virginia. Since there's no further business, this meeting is adjourned. Have a happy and safe Thanksgiving.